Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. It's a great help to be relatively late in the agenda because I can thank the speakers before for setting the stage in a number of ways that I hope will become apparent. Roger Beachy laid out some very big challenges that agriculture faces and where opportunities and possible solutions lie. Obviously, crop and agricultural technologies have a huge amount to contribute, and we've seen some of the remarkable progress in these talks. I've been asked to talk about the 21st century food challenge, the food security concept, and I'll be talking about food security in a holistic way. I won't be talking about agriculture. Many others have discussed this, but I think you'll see that as my talk proceeds, various bits and pieces fit together in a way that hopefully will be convincing. I'd also like to thank Paul Christou for quoting Norman Borlaug at the end of his talk, particularly the issue about peace, because my very first slide is about conflict, and this is due to the fact that the world food price crisis led to conflicts across the globe. The black clenched fist symbols, I hope you can see, are where there has been civil unrest. Politicians don't like that. The red export ban restrictions are those countries that imposed export of staple crops, and that, of course, affected those countries that would have been in receipt. So the whole notion of food security is very closely linked to the price of food, and I think some of the work that we've seen presented already will have a bearing as we go through the presentation. So food security is the big issue now. That is on everybody's lips. We see it in major science periodicals. We see it in leading journals such as The Economist. Food and Agriculture Organization, of course, put out their annual reports. But we also see it in the media, the newspapers we buy. The headline you see, fears grow over food supply. This is alarmist stuff. Russian extends export ban, riots in Africa. And only a month ago, we saw the World Food Day have a big double spread in the London, the quote, serious newspapers in the UK. One in seven will go hungry today. So, one of the concerns we have is how climate change and other aspects of environmental change will affect our ability to feed ourselves as a population. And obviously, it will bring additional complications to feeding the 9 billion that we anticipate on the planet in a few decades. And the diagram I have here is a study which looked at the anticipated decline in wheat yield in Australia by 2030. And I choose this for a reason. One's used perhaps to the diagrams of decline across the world. We saw one earlier this afternoon. But this is a country which exports wheat. The decline in wheat will affect obviously the export potential. And the point about that is it will affect the world market. A decrease of 20% in Western Australia will probably be all right for the nation, other than for the trade aspects. It won't affect the food security, but it will affect the world price of wheat. And many experiments, modeling studies, have really helped us to understand what will be happening in the production of food given a number of changes in biophysical variables. But the point about my presentation is that food security is more than, it's more than food production. Food security, according to this definition, which I think is a very good working definition, puts the emphasis on physical and economic access to food. Many people are signing up to this definition, and we're seeing it working in situations from the village in Africa on the left through to a situation in Northern Europe. It applies to us all. So food security is more than food production. It involves physical and economic access. And food security is underpinned by what I call food systems. Now, what are food systems? Food systems are complicated. This is a one representation, it's the most complex diagram I've ever found, about the global food system. And what it's trying to do is map the machinery of the food system. What it does not do is talk about what we get out of the food system. If we go back to the definition of food security, economic physical access, we can unpack that definition in terms of what we as society want. We want food security, we want it to be stable, and we want it to cover these three particular components. Food access, the affordability of food, is terribly important to us all, more important in the poorer nations where a larger proportion of disposable income is spent on food. Preference, what will the advent of the biotechnologies and the genetic modification we've been hearing about mean for food preference? And I can look to my colleagues and see the talks we've heard, many of them pinpointed to societal perception. The food utilization, the nutritional value, we've had talks about that. We've had talk about food safety. But there's also a social function that food fulfills. There's a religious function for many. There's a cultural function to do with identity, the notion of self, and cultural aspects. And then food availability, of course. We've seen a lot of evidence today about how these technologies will help promote production, reduce losses to weight, to pests and diseases, and also help with shelf life, the distribution button, the story about the potatoes, allowing the product to have a longer shelf life, be more robust in transport and storage. So we see the earlier talks mapping into this diagram. This is the food security outcome. But what do we do? And here, I hope, is a more simple representation of the very complex diagram I showed a few moments ago. By breaking down what I call the food system activities into four major areas, there's the producing food. We've heard a lot about that this afternoon. Processing and packaging, a little bit about that. Distributing and retailing, we haven't covered so much. The consuming of food. We are all involved in consuming food. We are all actors in the food system. And these food system activities give rise to these outcomes. That's the point. But they also give rise to some other outcomes which are of value to society: income, wealth, jobs. The truck driver for McDonald's is as much an actor in the food system as the agriculturalist or the fisher or the hunter. There are, needless to say, interactions. And these outcomes also give rise to environmental outcomes, looking at ecosystem stocks and flows and the like, and again, there are interactions. So that, I hope, is a more manageable representation of the food system. It certainly offers the opportunity for an analytical lens to think about the relationship between food security, that is what we are interested in, and the food system activities, which is what we do. But alas, food systems, however they're easy to draw in that way, are failing many. A typical diagram here, we see a lot of the dark and red colours in Africa. Sure, at that stage there were estimated 265 million people food insecure in Africa. This is a map of the proportion of the population. In absolute numbers, there's getting on for three times that amount of people insecure in Asia and the Pacific. And in other parts of the world, including the developed world, we see food insecurity. And this was a remarkable quotation from The Economist. Number of people having trouble paying for food increased 60% to 3 million. That's in the Big Apple itself. So there are dramatic issues across the world. So why is a regional perspective useful? Well, firstly, climate and many biogeographical features are common across a region, and natural disasters can often spread across a wide range of the subcontinent. Second, we have a number of regional political institutions which are established at the regional level. Here we see the CARICOM community in the Caribbean. Thirdly, the development agenda is increasingly being discussed at the regional level. Here we see the Asian Development Bank thinking about Asian GDP. We look at NEPAD across the African continent. AID has a Southern Africa program which thinks about Southern Africa as a block, not the individual countries. And lastly, adaptation options to cope with stress, whether it's environmental stress or political stress or socioeconomic stress of another sort, manifest, become apparent if one thinks of the region as a whole rather than just the nation or the plot, as of course many people, myself included, in agricultural science tend to do. And the examples here are improved physical infrastructure to allow the movement of foodstuffs within a region, strategic grain reserves to cope with times of stress, or improved quarantine dialogue and opportunities for harmonizing quarantine relationships throughout the region. But in thinking about the region, we need to think about the difference between scale and level. And this is really at the nub of why food insecurity arises so often. Scale is the analytical dimension, according to Cash et al., and level is where you are on that scale. So they identify a number of scales, all of which are intimately involved in the food security debate. Spatial scale, we're obviously all very familiar with, temporal scale, but also we see jurisdictional scale. Who has power at what level? An institutional scale. And these sorts of scales interact. They have interactions between the scales and between the levels on those scales. And this complexity is one of the reasons why food insecurity arises, because we are ignorant of many of these important interactions. There are what's termed scale challenges. And these are situations where the current combination of these interactions is undermining food security. Ignorance, failure to recognize important scales, and the example of distressed cattle sales that are actually reducing the national price, so feedback, and reduce the value to the person selling her cow. Mismatch, food security responses for weather extremes, planned perhaps at the national level versus planned at the local level. Different arrangements aren't working well together. And plurality, for instance, local food aid programs also trying to be useful when there are local social safety nets fulfilling a very important function. So the point about the regional studies is that they can help to identify these scale challenges and where a particular technology or a particular policy or a particular piece of infrastructure can actually help in breaking down these challenges, overcoming these challenges and improving food security. So we've got climate, weather-related perturbations often experienced at the regional level. So adaptation strategies focusing on socioeconomic systems may prove more effective if managed at that overall level. And environmental management related to food security may manifest most strongly at the regional level. The opportunity to give the enabling environment for the technologies we've heard about to actually flourish can come about most effectively if there is a regional agreement, a regional understanding, and we don't see opposition between neighboring states. And of course, governance. Regional governance structures have been established in many parts of the world, as I've already indicated. And these are often a clear client, if you will, for research. So my almost last slide. Why is it complicated? Who needs to be involved in discussions about this? Take an example question. How can Southern African food systems be adapted to reduce their vulnerability to global environmental change? It's on the minds of many scientists, natural scientists, social scientists have their contributions to make. But the point about the complexity of the issue is that scientists alone are not the only stakeholders. We have science agencies looking to improve food security science. We have development agencies looking to improve livelihoods and reduce vulnerability. We have the policy process, looking for improved policies. We have resource managers looking for improved natural resource management. And last but by no means least, we have the business community who are looking to improve profits. All of these actors are involved in this, all have an interest in this question. And so we need an understanding of the different roles and attitudes, perceptions, and aspirations these actors have. And we come back again, for instance, to the policy, to the public perception of some of the technologies we've been hearing about. It's not just what the scientists think, it's what society thinks, and this different range of stakeholders. And one way to overcome this is to have a number of communication methods, and participatory scenario exercises can be particularly valuable. So to conclude, we have a food system concept, which I present, work from the Global Environmental Change and Food Systems Project, and it tries to provide an analytical lens to show where a different intervention will have an outcome. We can think of it in terms of ecologies, as my last slide. We're probably very familiar with the notion of production ecology, looks at the link between the interactions between plants and environment. Agroecology brings in the whole agroecosystem, often including an aspect with the animal. Meanwhile, we have the area of human ecology. Again, looking at interconnectivity, community behavior, and spatial organization, but in this case, between institutions, between individuals, and between cultures. And what we can do, as I hope I've shown you, bring these notions together in what I call food system ecology to show how different actors and components of the food system interact and the outcome of taking a food ecology approach will be, I believe, greater insights into how the food system works, or more often the case, doesn't work, and what we can do about it. Thank you.